When a crime is committed, the perpetrator inevitably leaves behind something, a description, DNA, or physical evidence. This is the criminal's print on the scene. Welcome to the Criminal Prints Podcast, episode 15.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Criminal Prints Podcast, episode 15. This is Zach.
And this is your co-host, Jaron.
Thank you very much for joining us. We're thrilled to have you. Jaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Hey, not bad. I certainly can't complain. So today, we're going to talk about the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi. Emanuela Orlandi was born on June 14th, 1968, in Vatican City State. And Vatican City is a state that is an independent city-state, actually enclaved or within Rome, Italy.
It's a very small city. In fact, as of 2019, the population is 799. It is the smallest sovereign state in the world in both area and population.
And this was really interesting as I studied and researched this case because I thought, goodness gracious, it's a state inside of Rome. Very interesting. So her parents are Erkel and Maria Orlandi. Her father, Erkel, passed away in 2004, but thankfully, her mother, Maria, is still alive today.
So I'm just going to throw this out there now. This is in Italy, and a lot of the names we are not so skilled at pronouncing, but we're going to give it our very best effort.
So Emanuela was the fourth of five kids in the family. She had one brother, Petro, and three sisters, Maria Cristina, Natalina, and Federica. And at the time of her disappearance, Emanuela was 15 years old. She was 5'5" tall, had brown hair and brown eyes.
Her father, Erkel, was an employee at the Vatican Bank. And a little more about her, she loved music. In fact, she played the flute and the piano, and she was in the church choir as well. She had just finished her second year of high school, of course, in Rome. So even though her school year had ended, she did continue to take flute lessons. She did this three times a week, and I'm going to let Zach say the name of the school.
I'll give it my best shot here, folks. So she went to the Tommaso Ludovica de Victoria School.
That made it sound really easy to say. Good job.
Well, thank you. Who knows how accurate that is? Emanuela would travel by bus typically to get to the music school for her lessons. And after a few stops, she only had roughly 600 to 700 feet to go to get to the actual school. The unfortunate day we're going to be talking about today is June 22nd, 1983.
So, on this June 22nd, 1983, she left her family's apartment in Vatican City and traveled for her flute lessons. She was wearing gym shoes, jeans, and a white t-shirt. She took the number 64 bus to her music school, and she actually arrived to class late. During her lessons, she appeared distracted and asked to leave early at 6:50 p.m.,
So at 7 o'clock, she calls her sister and explains to her sister that on the way to flute lessons, she'd been stopped by a man in a green BMW. Now make a mental note of this green BMW because we will talk about this some more as we go on. But she said she'd been stopped by this man in the green BMW and that he'd offered her a lot of money to publicize Avon cosmetic products. So I guess you would say a job offer.
Yeah, but that is a really strange thing to happen unsolicited.
That is really strange.
Her sister, Federica, wisely suggested that she should talk to her parents before she makes any decisions on doing something like this. Emanuela then talked about the job offer a little later to one of her girlfriends as they walked to the bus stop. This is, of course, after the lessons. And once at the bus stop, we have multiple accounts of what happened. This is where it starts to get really tricky.
This does get difficult. So once at the bus stop, most articles that I have researched and I looked up said that the bus stop is the last location that Emanuela was seen. We do know that when her friend left her at the bus stop, Emanuela was in the company of an unknown girl. According to Insider.com, her friend saw Emanuela get on the bus and start talking to a red-haired female passenger. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of accounts I could see of her actually getting on the bus, but the red-haired female passenger, will come back to that. The red hair is key.
One other interesting thing is another witness came forward saying they saw a girl fitting Emanuela's description getting into a dark green BMW near the music school. So that's why Zach earlier said, keep in mind this dark green BMW.
And we do know that she was stopped before flute lessons by somebody driving a dark green BMW. This is fascinating to me. So as her friends got on the bus, they said that they saw her talking to a red-haired woman. So then again, the red-haired woman comes into play. They also said that they saw the green BMW around and that it had an Avon satchel or a bag that was visible. So this is interesting because you got the Avon aspect, plus you got the dark BMW, the dark green BMW. So one thing we do know, and Jaron, I'm sure you would agree, is that even though the accounts were a little different, some had her getting on the bus, some had her at the bus stop, and another account had her actually getting in the dark green BMW, we do know that the one thing in common is the red-haired woman.
We also know that one way or another, this bus stop area is her last known location.
Absolutely.
Before we get any further, we're going to play a quick promo from our friends at A Bloody Mess Podcast. They take a very different approach than we do. They're very entertaining. They're well worth the listen, so we'll play their promo now.
Hey, I'm Chen.
And I'm James.
We're from A Bloody Mess Podcast, the badly researched true crime podcast.
We straddle the boundaries between documentary and comedy, and our aim is to leave you laughing and thinking, wow, I didn't know that.
So once you're done with this podcast, add us to your download lists and give us a go. Have a nice day.
Bye.
There's been a murder of podcasts.
So when Emanuela didn't return home, her parents, as any parents would do, became concerned. The later it got, clearly the more worried they got. Emanuela was also supposed to meet with her sister and had an appointment to meet with her sister, and that didn't happen. This appointment was supposed to take place with her sister Maria Cristina at the Supreme Court of Cassation, which is the courthouse to us. When her parents called the police to report that Emanuela had not made it home, the police suggested waiting and said perhaps the girl was with her friends.
So over the next 2 days, most of the action taken to find her was from the parents. At 3 p.m. local time on the 23rd, which is the next day, her parents called the director of the music school. They asked if any of her friends or classmates had any information. Also on the 23rd, she was officially declared a missing person.
So keep in mind, this is the day after she went missing.
They also spent the next couple days putting announcements in multiple newspapers. These announcements, maybe somewhat unfortunately in hindsight, included their home phone number.
And this is really intriguing to me because it shows how hard they tried, how much they wanted to bring her home. But yes, this is a very interesting twist that their home phone number was in there.
On June 25th, that's a Saturday, a young person who claimed to be 16 years old and named... Uh-oh, Zach, I'm in trouble. You want to bail me out on this one, too?
Pierre Luigi.
So, Pierre Luigi said that he and his fiance met Emanuela that afternoon at a Piazza Novana. He mentioned her flute, her hair, and her glasses. No, she didn't like wearing her glasses.
So, Pierre Luigi also gave more details that were accurate and matched Emanuela. Said that she had just had a haircut and introduced herself as Barbelia. Pierre Luigi also said that she told him she ran away from home. and that she was currently selling Avon products. And this is interesting because this is kind of the connection from before.
So one way or another, it seems as if he does know something or knows somebody that knows something. On June 28th, a man calling himself Mario called the family. I don't know, maybe now's a bad time to point out that Pierluigi and Mario Luigi, this is all seeming a little strange. Mario said he's the owner of a bar named Ponte Vittorio, which is between the Vatican and the music school. So he said that a new customer, going by the name of Barbara, confided in him, and according to Mario, Barbara said she ran away from home. But she also added that she would return home for her sister's wedding, and there was an upcoming wedding. It was on June 30th.
So keep in mind, at this point, Rome was plastered with about 3,000 posters displaying Emanuela's photograph. That's a lot of posters.
It is. You know, so now we have Mario and Luigi. They both claim that they talked to her. They both claim that she went by some form of the name Barbara and that she ran away from home. It's almost too convenient. It's either true or too convenient, right?
It is, certainly. So on July 3rd, Pope John Paul II, during the Angelus, brought global attention to the case, and I do mean global. He appealed to the kidnappers to bring Emanuela home. The Pope said, quote, "I am close to the Orlandi family," close quote. And he also said, "I deliver my prayer to the Lord so that Emanuela can return home soon, unharmed, and embrace the loved ones who await her with indescribable pain."
And considering how few people live in the Vatican, it is likely that he would know a lot of those people. On July 5th, a man calls both the Vatican and Emanuela's home. So remember, we mentioned they gave out their home phone number. This is where you kind of wonder, is that a good idea? The man claims to be holding her hostage, and he wants to make an exchange.
So for the return of Emanuela, the Pope must obtain the liberation or the freedom of Mehmet Ali Akka. And Mehmet is actually a Turkish man who shot the Pope in May of 1981.
Well, that's not a very nice thing to do at all, is it?
That's certainly not nice, and it's not very smart unless you want to spend time in jail.
So they refer to this caller as the American because of his accent. He gave a deadline for this exchange, and the deadline was July 20th. He also played a recording or a taped message, and the voice in the recording said multiple times, "I will be entering the third year at the school this year."
And this is interesting because we do know that she had completed her second year, so she would be going to her third. Her uncle, also named Mario, answered the phone when the American called the Orlandi home. And her uncle said that he recognized the voice as Emanuela.
So that is actually quite outstanding.
That is, certainly. That's a key piece right there. The American, as they referred to him, also said that the earlier callers, Pierluigi and Mario, and keep in mind, of course, not to be confused with the uncle, were members of the organization. And this, of course, was a terrorist organization that claimed to be holding Emanuela prisoner and wanted to make the exchange for Mehmet Ali Akka.
On July 6th, the young man called the newsroom for ANSA, that's a national information agency, and he said, quote, "We have had contact with the Vatican secretary, a message that the Vatican is hiding. In the Parliament Square, in a rubbish bin, you will find the proof that the girl is in our hands." So the editor goes to the indicated place and he finds a photocopy of the music school identity card, the receipt for an exam fee, the phone number to the Orlandi home, and a note that said, "With great affection, your Emanuela."
On July 7th, the American once again calls, and this will be a trend. The American calls a bunch, and provides various details of Emanuela. For example, her interest in one of her music classmates by the name of Alberto, and her family did not know about this individual. They did not know about Alberto before this, so this information was certainly accurate and reliable. So with the July 6th phone call, the magistrate who were in charge of overseeing Emanuela's case personally did not believe that this was a credible connection.
On day 8, an unknown person with a southern accent called the house of Laura, who was a music classmate. The unknown caller said, quote, "We have taken the citizen Emanuela Orlandi only because she belongs to the Vatican State. Vatican officials and investigators of the Italian Republic tend to discredit the true nature of the demand, reducing negatively the time available for our negotiations. We are not a revolutionary or terrorist organization. We have never described us as such. We consider ourselves people interested only in liberating Attica. The deadline is July 20th.
So once again, this deadline is mentioned.
I will say that if you're trying to get a terrorist released by kidnapping somebody, you may be a terrorist.
Oh, certainly. And you might want to think about another way to get somebody out of there. So a man with a foreign accent asks Anza if Laura had delivered them the message. And he said it's proof that Emanuela is fine, and that she is the one that gave them the telephone number of her friend Laura. So this is intriguing to me, that he's claiming that we got this number from Emanuela of her friend. And on this same day, they actually allowed Attica to be in a press conference on the patio of police headquarters in Rome. Holy cow.
That really is a pretty amazing step. And it makes you think, hey, by this point, the investigators were taking this angle very seriously. In his press conference, he said, quote, "I am against this criminal action." He also said, quote, "The attack against the Pope was organized by the KGB. Now, I don't know anything about this attack, but this is all starting to sound pretty crazy.
Holy cow, now the KGB is getting brought into it? Are they going to be talking about JFK next?
Quite possibly.
Holy cow. So on July 14th, a call from Carla, who was another one of Emanuela's friends, she had a lot of friends, was made to deliver another message to Anza. And it said that in St. Peter's Square, towards the Angelus window, we are leaving a tape addressed to certain technicians who have considered the first one false. Anza journalists go to the square, but found nothing.
On a July 17th phone call to Anza again, they say there is a tape wrapped in a manifesto that is on the stairwell that goes from Dataria Street to Quirinal Square. They said the previous tape they talked about was recovered by Vatican officials. Of course, the Vatican doesn't agree with this.
Certainly would deny that.
The tape is recorded on both sides. On the first side, there are sobs and moans. These words are heard, quote, "But why are you doing this to me? Also, oh God, but what is it? And I feel bad. My God, I'm hurt."
On the other side of the tape, declarations of earlier messages are repeated. So on the 19th, Jaron, guess who makes a comeback?
The American.
It is certainly the American, and he calls and speaks to both the Secretary Cardinal Casseroli and to Anza, and he reminds them both of the deadline. And so July 20th, which is the deadline, that morning, Pope John Paul II, at the end of his general audience, prays for Emanuela again.
and at midday, a caller with a foreign accent ordered the monks of the Santa Francisca Romana Church to deliver a message to Ansa. Part of it said, quote, "With July 20th approaching, we do not lose hope in the will of those who can adapt a last gesture towards a solution." A call to Ansa confirms that the monks had transmitted the message. It warned, "Today is the last message before the deadline of the ultimatum expires."
So with that, we will leave you on a cliffhanger, and that will be the end of part one of the disappearance of Emanuela Orlandi. Please come back and join us again next week for part two. So please check out our Twitter at Podcast Criminal, and we have our Facebook group page. You can certainly check that out. If you would be so kind, please leave us a review on any podcast app you listen to. It would certainly be appreciated and will help with the future growth of the podcast. And again, thank you for listening to us, and everybody have an absolutely fantastic day.
And remember, keep your record clean and your prints off the scene.